Lantern Inkslingers.
Welcome to Wellington Inkslingers. I am your host, Angela Wells, and to my left...
Hi, I'm Karen Kotzer.
I'm Jack Newhouse.
I'm Sarah Nelson.
And I'm Catherine Haynes.
Okay, so a brief description of us. We are a writers group based in Wellington, New Zealand. Who here has been in the group the longest? I've only been like a year.
Karen,
that would have to be me. I was there from the inception of it all.
And so, how long have we been around as a group?
It's coming up to 3 years. It's very exciting. We'll have our 3-year anniversary this Nano.
Nano, because NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, or in our case, it would be International Novel Writing Month, because it started in the U.S. and it came over here. So we started as recently as a group, one November. And continue hanging out as a group, as friends, as writers, readers, general nerds. And so now we have a podcast, and we'll see how it goes. Let's start with some talking points. Who here's been published? We've got Catherine.
Yeah.
Catherine and Jack.
I will be published.
You will be
as
published.
Of the end of next month. I've just had word that it will be officially released on October 30th, just in time for Halloween.
Oh, that's great.
Excellent. Okay, well, what's being published?
The book is Baby Teeth, which is an anthology of stories based on the creepy, sometimes extremely scary things that toddlers will say. I believe we got the list off Reddit, used that as writing prompts, and now we've put the book together as a charity project for Duffy Books and Homes.
Oh, wow. Good can come of Reddit. Okay. Well done. And then, Catherine, what are you working on then? Or what did you get published?
It's nearly the 1-year anniversary of my first story that got published.
Ooh.
Yay. I just realized that right now. It's in an anthology called Magical Mayhem, put out by Ambush Books. About 10%, some form of percentage goes to a charity, Internet Freedom Foundation or something. I will remember that.
Okay.
Find out what exactly it is and tell you. But it's about all the wacky magical things that happen to teenagers.
Hmm.
So spells gone wrong, magic wizards, witches. Magical Mayhem basically sums up the title. My story is called Spellcheck. It's about why you shouldn't get your magical spells off the internet.
Because you could get it from Reddit, yeah. Who knows what you'd summon. So that's interesting then. So Jack's then part of a anthology then about wee children's sort of horror or weird fiction then. Is that basically what it is?
Yeah, mainly toddlers.
Toddlers then. And then Catherine, yours is about like in the young adult range?
It's a young adult.
Young adult.
Anthology, yes.
Anthology teen. That's excellent. Because young adult, we can start this as a topic. Young adult itself is a perfectly cromulent genre. Some people don't seem to think so.
It's a magical time.
It's a magical time.
It's a very emotional time. So you're writing with emotions right by the surface, and I think that's really fun to write, and sometimes it's really fun to read, especially when you're an adult and you're caught up in the real world and all these real life things that are causing emotions that are mostly stress, and you're not getting so passionate about things. Mm-hmm. When you're young and you don't have necessarily those worries, though you do have your own worries, everything is just so passionate and visceral and raw, and that's fun to play with.
It's also a time of first, so everything seems really important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your first love is the ultimate love. Nothing will ever come after this that will ever be as good. Your first time doing this, or first time you've learned that, it's your first experiences of anything, your first tastes of what adulthood could be like.
And it's so fun to play with that metaphorically as well, which is why young adult fantasy is so popular, especially urban fantasy.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's that classic coming of age, mm-hmm. and finding your place in the world,
yeah, mm-hmm.
which new adult feeds off of, and the next step of that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So those are the currently published people. Who's currently in the process of writing on a manuscript?
In theory. I've got a Camp Nano book from April this year, which trailed off after about 60,000 words. I've trimmed the last 30,000 words of that, and now I want to go back and do it right.
Do it right.
It's the question of doing it.
Yes, that's what Nano's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm between novels at the moment. I've just shelved my baby from the last 2 years.
Yes.
Which was about a teenage girl framed for serial murder. And I love it, and I love my characters, but I don't think that it's the right time for me to be writing it because I got too invested in it. So this Nano, I'm going to be working on a new adult project, a students in a house, Agatha Christie style locked room mystery, which slowly turns into a horror slasher gore fest of fun and adventure.
90s.
Yeah. Can you tell us more about the students in the house?
No, because that is not a place that I've gotten to in the planning yet. I have come up with, oh, that's creepy, and that's creepy, and that's very creepy.
Yes. But nothing.
But nothing about the characters and the people, mm-hmm. No. It's just an idea at the moment.
I have just started a new work in progress. It took me about 4 days to come up with a working title, and I banged my head against the wall because it was so obvious. Mm. It's a story about a necromancer's daughter, so the obvious title is The Necromancer's Daughter.
Oh, yeah.
It's a family piece, sort of. I've described it in so many weird ways. I think the current one is a Tim Burton-ish take on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Whoa, okay, I'm totally reading that.
The culture clash between two generations and two different upbringings. Mm-hmm. Especially when you have a guy who has become immortal about 80 years ago, and so he's still sitting in that time period, and his daughter is now a computer geek.
Hmm.
And he has no idea how to A, handle a 16-year-old girl, B, handle the world that she's dragging him into.
Uh-huh.
So there's, you know, there's ghosts and all sorts of wackiness that happens around Halloween. Summoning of the dead. Not zombies, the spirits of the dead. I'm going back to the more traditional necromancy.
Where it's ghost spirits, not
so
fleshly things.
One of the things I'm going to be doing is reading that bit in the Odyssey where Odysseus goes into the underworld and summons the spirits to get the prophecy of what he should do next. That's sort of necromancy. So maybe if it turns out to be a series, there'll be journeys into the underworld. But it's more about this relationship between this father and daughter who, last time they saw each other, she was 2. How are they going to cope with this?
Something I'm doing in the lead up to NaNoWriMo, because I'm between novels at the moment and I haven't been writing for personal reasons for about 6 months and I'm a little out of practice, I'm going to be, hopefully, if I can come up with them, doing a writing exercise a day throughout the entire month of October. Some of that will be free writing to get my speed up, because in NaNoWriMo, it's really important to get a lot of words out quickly. Some of it will be exercises in dialogue, exercises in characterization, and I'm hoping I can get a few people who are going to do this with me so that we can maybe pass like one piece that we think is our best of the week or that needs the most work. Between us and do critiques and hopefully not write complete rubbish for Nano.
Yeah, that's really what we need to do, critiquing.
Yeah.
And actually writing in this writer's group.
Okay. Yeah, I'm personally not writing much at the moment. I've got my manuscript from last Nano sort of. I've gotten it about a month ago. I got it all cut up in blocks and put into Scrivener, which is a fantastic program.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a great deal on it, so of course I got downloaded it. Yeah, I might be doing Nano with a new idea. I have a semi-serious relationship advice book in the works. Might work on that, but yeah, I'm not entirely sure about that. It was my idea to start this podcast in the first place, so I might actually focus on that for a bit before going back to writing. So on the next topic then, who's reading stuff? Jack.
I just recently finished the recent Hugo winner Red Shirts by John Scalzi.
What did you think of it?
It's really nicely done.
Yeah.
Especially the codas were quite emotional.
Yeah.
And the dialogue, especially earlier in the book, was a little Sorkin-esque. But yeah, the core themes are really important, especially for writers to keep in mind.
Mm.
Yeah. You should allow your characters agency and not create people just to be killed for other people's purposes. It's almost like a Kantian categorical imperative as applied to fictional characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that you shouldn't use anyone as mere means.
That's why when I do have characters that I know need to be killed for plot reasons, I always make sure that I plan out their character arc completely. Although sometimes that does mean getting killed halfway through their arc, but always at an important plot-related moment.
Yes, I try to. I mean, trying to go through different stories, you know, I need to kill off something here and someone there, because if you're doing a story about a war, which is another story, people are going to die. And I can't just kill off the faceless enemy soldiers. People on the good side have to die too, to show the stakes, and not everyone's going to come out okay. And then I start, you know, these have got to be real people, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to kill you now, you're too awesome.
That's why it's neat to have the, you know, the typical story structure of exposition, rising action, climax, that last word that's kind of Frenchish that I can never pronounce.
Denouement.
That's the one.
Denouement.
I always forget how to pronounce it.
I will never forget how to pronounce it.
I've heard it so many times, it's just one of those words that's that block in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do that for all my characters, including the ones that die. So obviously they end up dying around like the midpoint of their own arc, because, you know, if you're going to kill someone off, you can't really let them have a nice little happy ending, because that, well, unless you want them to have that, but usually that defeats the purpose. But it just makes sure that they have their own story, as opposed to being, look, I'm a person here, and I'm going to simper at the protagonist.
Yes.
And then I'm going to die.
Yes.
Yeah, although Dandy would, of course, point out that the most...
There's a word here.
Pathetic, I think, is originally. But, yes, one of the best times to kill someone for maximum impact is just as they're getting the happy ending.
Yes.
That is true, that is true. However, I think that's a little overplayed, and one thing that I like to do is to mix up structure. For instance, when I write murder mysteries, everyone expects the twist to happen at the end of the book, but readers expect that, and they can guess the twist by then. So if you put the twist around just before the halfway point, and then you change the novel from being, say, a mystery to a thriller or something like that, then you can play with expectations. And I think that's similar to if you're an author, that's probably not if you're an unknown author, like me, but if you're an author that's established as murdering your characters when they get happy endings, or if you get into any sort of pattern like that, then that's when the readers will expect them to die, especially if they know somebody's going to die. So I just like playing with expectations.
Yes, it's just one thing I like about actually not wanting to kill my characters. Like, if it hurts me to see them die, it better work for the reader as well, because if I've made them so real that I don't want to kill them off, people will be attached to them as well.
That's why
hopefully because I've actually put down on paper what is in my head.
Yeah.
Which is another issue entirely.
That's why I believe that the best characters to kill are the ones you don't want to kill, and the best things to do with your plot are the things you really don't want to do with your plot.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Excellent.
It's down to it. So it's the phrase "kill your darlings," as they say, or it's or is that is there are interpretations of that phrase?
Yes, there's, you know, kill all those favorite lines that are absolutely wonderful but don't work. The ones that you love, you know.
But, I always find it very cathartic to just delete an entire chunk of text and just get rid of it, and you can't find it anymore, and it's terrifying. Kind of like plucking your eyebrows, because it is. It's very intimidating.
You can't put it back.
You can't put it back in your eyebrow, exactly. So if you work on a novel like plucking your eyebrows, that is the worst analogy I've ever come up with.
Getting,
but I like it.
Getting a tattoo, the tattoo artist sneezes, you know?
It's a terrible mental image.
Or cutting hair, because like, when I've cut hair, you know, and if you're using like clippers or something like that, and you accidentally, and you're doing to trim the back of someone's head, and then it just goes,
The hair by Mr. Bean at London thing.
Yeah. Whoops.
I've ended up with the number two several times cutting my own hair that way.
Yes. Yes. It happens.
I've been really tempted to chop off all my hair recently. I'm glad I haven't done that.
Yeah. Honey, I'm your hairstylist. I'll make the decisions. darling. Since we're on the topic of reading, we can insert a quick all-around rant, because here we are in New Zealand, and the cost of books is just too damn high, isn't it? Too damn high.
Meme time.
Which is unfortunate, because it means that a lot of us have to buy books from places like Book Depository, which is really bad for indie booksellers,
yep.
who we're not supporting.
Which is bad for the New Zealand book thing in general, But of course, there's also the fact of, we want to buy books that we can actually get a hold of.
Mm, yeah.
So many books don't reach here, and then with ebooks, they're just region locked.
Yeah. You know? Region locking makes no sense.
It's annoying. Like, especially if they don't even have a place, any versions of them in New Zealand anyway. It's like, hello, here's an advertisement sent to you directly. This book is on sale. I'm like, yes, I really want to read this. No, it's not there.
It does seem like a lot of publishers in all sorts of industries are so afraid of being pirated that they will leave money on the table rather than make it easy for people to buy things.
Yes.
Well, and they're missing the point.
Here is my $10.
Yeah.
They're missing the point that a lot of people are pirating because they can't buy these things.
Right,
because
they can't get it legit.
It's the same with how New Zealand has high piracy rates of television programs as well, because we get everything like a year or two later.
Yeah, if we get it at all. It's like... It's
almost... Well, at least that's long enough that you've forgotten all the Twitter and Tumblr spoilers.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
You never forget Tumblr spoilers. They just repeat over and over again until you've seen the same GIF 50 times. And
have I mentioned that I avoid Tumblr like the plague?
And Saver doesn't even help me, because you put Tumblr Saver and you put all these words and like, oh, I don't want to see Supernatural, I don't want to see these things, and then something comes up and it doesn't have any tags on it, it's just a GIF, and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ.
It's just like, hello, I want to give you this money.
Exactly.
Why won't you take my money? You can convert it into American money.
It works. It goes that way.
It works. That's why we have the credit cards.
I know. I ran face first into this when I was buying a book for a friend in an ebook. I saw this book, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes, and I thought, like, oh, she's a Holmes fan. I think she'd read this and give a good interpretation, see how worthy it is. On many levels, and it was like, I was like, oh, I'll send it to her as an ebook because it's nice and cheap and she'll get it immediately. But no, the moment I went to Amazon and like sent it to her email, she's like, I can't get that. I'm like, what? Why? She's like, oh, because it's region locked. And I was like, oh, for God's sake, it's an ebook. It's just, it's not even.
And that's even when you bought it for her.
I bought it for her, and it was like, and I mean, it's because my address, my billing address was in New Zealand, and she's over in Boston, and it's just like, I was just like, oh, for God's sake. But thankfully, she could still convert the amount to an Amazon gift card and then buy the same book in the region locked ebook
they
version.
They really should have a way
What's
to get over
point?
That. People have friends all over the world.
Exactly.
And
I wanted to send a friend an ebook, just bam, and she had to go through all that rigmarole, and yeah. So
that's ridiculous.
Although even with the region locking, the ones that aren't region locked, at least you don't have to pay more on shipping than on the actual book.
That's, that is also another reason why if I buy hard copies, I do buy from Book Depository.
Because of the shipping fact.
Yeah, because they do free shipping. And
you know, I want to buy this. It costs $20 American. Shipping, $40 American.
Yeah.
Why does that even...
I've seen books for $10 with $40 shipping. I'm like...
Yeah.
No.
It's the New Zealand tax. It's the screw you, New Zealand. You should have thought of that before you... Well... before I moved here, because I moved here before you were born here. Screw you.
Yeah. Take your clean air and shove
Take
it.
Your clean air and your sheep.
Sheep everywhere.
I should explain that at the beginning too, that yes, it doesn't sound like we're in New Zealand because I'm the host. It's because I moved here 4 years ago. I'm terribly sorry for causing any confusion. As did Karin is also not from here. She's from South Africa. And the rest of you here, though, you are natives from one part or another of the country.
Yes.
Where are you from, Catherine? Are you from...
I'm from Wellington.
You are from Wellington.
Like,
whereas Sarah's from...
I'm from Christchurch,
which
is the other island
the other
that
island.
We don't talk about.
We don't talk about.
I'm from a tiny little town you've probably never even heard of called Tauroa.
Uh-huh, yes.
Anywhere in New Zealand, I mean...
Even...
No one's heard of it.
Even in New Zealand, they're like, huh?
Yeah, you're from the place that now has earthquakes.
Yeah,
I'm a place that from that I'm from the place that traditionally has the earthquakes.
Yeah,
also hobbits.
And hobbits.
And hobbits.
Yes.
We had a murder in my hometown a while ago.
Very upsetting. And we have to know how delighted Sarah sounds here, because this will whenever the subject of murder comes up, she just lights up like fairy lights.
It was very exciting. I went on stuff, and they were like, "Who done it?" and rang Yura, and I'm like, "Not me," because I was in Wellington, guys.
No. Alibi?
Yes, that's actually a thing that we've had to discuss about our distinct lack of serial killers.
Oh yeah, that's another thing New Zealand has.
Well, either we don't have serial killers or we have very good serial killers.
Like Dexter.
Like me.
Yeah.
Or like, hang on.
Maybe they're good in the fact they only do like one or to a year.
Yeah.
Most. It's and like, then they go to Australia.
It's like someone falls in a ravine while tramping, you know? I mean, that's sort of, it's, or if someone, their boat sinks off of, like, Kaikoura is actually a really good, that would be the equivalent of Bay Harbor in Dexter, because the continental shelf, like, because when I went whale watching there, they were doing a very informative talk about Kaikoura and how it's all like, yes, yeah, so the moment you know, get away from the beach, it's like the continental shelf just sort of goes woof, and that's why sperm whales come in so close. You could just dump a body, it just goes all the way down to was it the benthic zone? I don't know.
Well, I guess it's like any career. If you want to get to the top of your chosen career path, you have to go overseas.
God damn it. No, it doesn't matter what.
Brain drain.
Blood drain. Brain drain, blood drain.
Excellent. Pain drain.
Something.
Yeah, we only have the one.
We have one from the, what, late 1800s?
1800s. The baby farmer.
The baby farmer. Minnie Dean.
That's her name. Yeah. She's like is it the first, the last, the only woman hanged. Hanged. Hanged in New Zealand?
I'm pretty sure she was the only one. There were others that were sentenced, but never actually got the death penalty.
Yeah. Yeah, Newlands Baby Farmer.
Newlands Baby Farmer. Yeah. Yeah, that's Wellington. Right. Woo!
Well, that's really near where I live, so.
Yes. Yeah, we love whenever New Zealand's in the news. Doesn't matter. America's Cup.
Yeah.
Mass murder, you know, whatever.
Like,
or not mass murder, hardly. The closest thing was the Ar Moana massacre.
Yeah, and the Rarimu one.
The which one?
Rarimu was another mass. Yes. Yeah, we don't do the serial killings, the mass shootings.
Mass shootings, they get taken down pretty quickly. Yeah,
I mean, some of them have taken down a couple of cops in the one go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't do the serial killer thing, just the mass killings.
Yeah.
I really think we are overdue for one, though, so...
Are you going to fix that?
No, although I also have a problem that there are not enough female serial killers. Like, we are seriously underrepresented in that particular...
We were one of the first developed countries to give women the vote. I mean, you think we were more...
Well, we do, admittedly. Our only serial killer is a woman. New Zealand is a very progressive place for serial killers.
I know, it's just like, you know, the female prime minister, female...
there was a time when the top five positions were held by women.
Yeah, or top three or whatever, yeah. And everyone was like, they're taking
probably
over.
Five.
Even though it was like half. We had like...
Judge.
We had actual equality, like half and half, and a lot of men were screaming, oh my god, they're taking over. But anyway, I'm moving on from murder. There's gonna be murder.
There's gonna be murder. There will be blood.
Coming soon. What do we have coming soon? What's everyone looking forward to book-wise?
I probably will read Dr. Sleep, which is Stephen King's new novel, which features a grown-up Danny Torrance and a group of bad guys who are trying to recruit young children with The Shining. So it's the sequel to The Shining. Uh-huh. And just because I enjoyed The Shining and I feel a sort of certain loyalty to it, mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily intrigued by the premise of the book, but I'll give it a chance.
It sounds consistent with the. I mean, it was with the first book. It was more like that old guy who told the kid he had the Shining, and he was more in a protective role.
Well,
so it's like
the original one was, you know, set up in the isolated hotel, so it was very, because I'm a fan of the slasher and the group of people isolated and slowly dying off thing, which is why I originally liked The Shining, because it was very similar. You're cut off from the rest of the world and evil is happening. So I'm not sure that you're going to get the same thing in the sequel, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it will still be interesting to read. If we get it in New Zealand.
If we get it. Don't have to pirate it.
I would never.
Never
pirate it. What about... There are, of course, more film adaptations coming out of young adult books. There's anyone looking forward to any of those?
Not young adult book adaptations, but I am looking forward to the Newt Scamander spin-off.
What is that?
It's the Harry Potter spin-off movie about Newt Scamander, the guy who wrote Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, in New York in like the 1920s.
Okay, that does sound like that. Okay.
So it's J.K. Rowling writing the screenplay and everything, so it's not a book.
Mm-hmm.
It's an original film in that universe.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because obviously the Harry Potter universe is so big that stuff like that is
easy
to do.
Easy to get out.
I mean, since it's in the 1920s, like, when was Dumbledore born?
He's going to be in it, but he'll be
He'll have red hair.
He'll be that. He'll be that swinging red, like crushed velvet wearing dandy Dumbledore is one of my favorite characters.
What's going to be really interesting, I guess, is seeing the American Wizarding World rather than the British, because Harry Potter's very, very, very British.
So very.
And it'll be interesting to see J.K. Rowling writing something American, because everything she's done, The Cuckoo's Calling, which I read and I really loved, was very British. Mm-hmm. The Casual Vacancy, which I read and did not love so much.
Yeah,
the most British book I've ever read.
Yeah. More British than Midsummer Murders.
That was like Yorkshire pudding in a book. Yeah.
England. The
so it's going to be very interesting to see how she manages to write American.
Because I don't know if the character of Newt Scamander is specifically, if he's American, but the fact that it's going to be set there...
There will be American
characters.
It's
going to be the American Wizarding World, that's going to be so different than the British Wizarding World.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see, because I just love meta, so I'm curious to see, you know, how developed it is. Because that might explain why the Americans didn't show up to stop Voldemort, those bastards. Well,
Americans showing up late to every war.
Yes. Where were you guys having breakfast?
They might have had their own troubles.
The Wizarding World equivalent to overpaid, oversexed, and overhere, but
they would have been very. I wonder if American wizards are more capitalist. I don't know. It's just like it would have been.
Maybe
like,
they just spent the whole time filibustering.
They would be a product of their culture.
They'd be a product of their culture.
But they might be the repressed part of the culture, and they could all be really communist.
Yeah, they could be. Yeah, they could be like workers'
or
party.
Or maybe because it's just so internally in England at that time, it's not something they felt they needed to get involved with.
Maybe.
It's America, though.
England.
What would the equivalent of, like, hey, they've got oil. Like, would it be
What are we going to have?
Dragon.
Well, Wales has sheep. What does England have?
I think Bowie. American wizarding culture could be more isolated in terms of European wizarding culture is so massive and so... They can actually see each other more often.
Mm-hmm. The Triwizard Tournament.
Exactly, and they can be more involved, and it can be more dangerous sort of thing. But that's what I'm curious about, is how it's going to all fit in, and what it's going to mean for the sort of Harry Potter universe of wizarding stuff.
And remember, Hogwarts is like 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
They've had their ministry and its predecessors for a long time. Mm. Like, they had their first female minister for magic hundreds of years ago.
Right, and it's a matter
of... And even before then, they had female leaders.
Yeah.
So, meanwhile, the American wizards would have shown up. From England wizards would have shown up.
Here we're talking about the Western versus what could have been indigenous magic.
Yes, like because that actually shows up in Fantastic...
It's been too long since I've read it. Tell me, I can't remember.
So the Wellington Ministry of Magic always has to... If there's like carvings or something that shows these white guys on broomsticks, they've secreted away and put them in the ministry. Because it seems that the Pākehā wizards showed up before the non-magical Pākehā arrived. Mm-hmm. So there's evidence of, you know, Pākehā being on the North Island, South Island before traditional acceptance of it in our history.
Mm-hmm.
So they were there doing their research on the plants and the animals, like the Opali and the South Island and everything.
Do you remember anything about America in the Quidditch through the ages?
They play quad pot. They don't like Quidditch.
Oh, quad pot. Yeah, yes, because that would be the equivalent of like American football.
Versus rugby. Yes.
So was there anything about indigenous people?
There is some stuff
in any of the American continent sort of thing that's going on.
I think there were some mentions. Just like there were some mentions of Māori. In like Quidditch Through the Ages stuff like that.
I'm gonna have to read it again.
But because it did talk about the different attitudes between, say, the Japanese wizards, the Japanese and Chinese wizards. I think it's like the Japanese that have the tradition of burning their broomsticks after victories or losses
something like that.
It's like
I haven't read an ages. It's a little counterproductive.
Yeah. But then maybe they could
ceremonial burning.
Oh yeah, it's probably magical fire.
So they talk about the differences and things like that. But those books were really skinny and they were very brief.
Little supplements.
The fact they actually talk about Australia and New Zealand is a big thing.
Yeah.
No, and not even, you know, Australia rivers. And one line of New Zealand.
Yeah.
Like, they specifically meant the Motuhara Macaw.
We were always so excited. Yeah.
And
the
pet phoenix Sparky. Woo. Yes, guess who likes Harry Potter?
Yeah. One of the great things about Harry Potter is that Rowling has said that she thinks so much about the worlds that all this sort of stuff that we're talking about isn't just fangirling and conjecture. It's stuff that will actually...
That's actually been
come
relevant.
Out.
It's
and,
relevant.
Yeah.
But guys, Jazz Age wizards.
Yeah.
That's gonna be great.
Jazz Age Dumbledore. Literally will be the groovy new Dumbledore.
Well, you know, they had their equivalent of World War II and a lot of parallels for Muggle historical events. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering what the Wizarding World equivalent of Prohibition would have been.
Oh. That and, I mean...
no more butterbeer.
The race issues in
race.
America, which... which still... huge problem in the 1920s.
Yeah, race in the wizarding
would
world.
At least
like,
in the British wizarding
in the
world, because we see
a lot more monocultural in Britain. You know, it's a lot more.
But
I
we
mean,
also
there were people of color, but
yeah, I mean, well, Dean Thomas has a magical parent. Mm-hmm. Not that he knows of this, of course.
Yeah,
and Dean Thomas is black.
Mm-hmm. And Cho Chang, despite her name being
I did love her Scottish accent in the movie. Mm-hmm. That was
delightful.
That is such the best accent. It's just not what you expect. You expected this British girl, like Scottish.
Yeah.
And there's also Blaise Sabini.
Blaise Sabini.
The controversial, my picture of my white Blaise Sabini is shattered thing. Well, first they thought he was a girl, then they thought he was this white Italian guy. We just had this really, really hot black guy.
He was described in the book as being sort of, I think,
he was
dark
like, well,
skin.
They talk about how incredibly beautiful his mother is.
Yeah.
And well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's a pureblood who's ranked up high up there, but he's like smart enough to not get involved with that stuff. I mean, he hangs out with Malfoy and everything, but he's like,
I'm getting out of Dodge when I have to. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's obviously differences in how they treat skin colour versus the blood. So maybe America has different attitudes towards blood, especially if they have so many different... Because the newer
because
Western...
The indigenous people plus the...
all the different countries, you know...
The immigrants...
New England versus New York.
Mm-hmm.
Those sort of areas.
The South. Oh my God, the
England
South. I can't even start on the South. The South is just...
It just occurred to me that jazz could take exactly the same place for Muggle horns that it did for black people in 1920s. Mm-hmm. Muggle America.
That would be
because
cool.
It would be something that... They know that the pure bloods don't, that they could bring into the culture. And
maybe
build the status that way.
Even just less pure bloods as a whole, because pure bloods, you know, probably would have stuck in England.
Because of the class system
as
well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the ones that did probably would have been younger sons and daughters trying to stake their own claim.
Yep.
Well, pure bloods are a relative term.
Exactly.
I mean, if your parents are Muggleborns, but if your great-great-grandparents are Muggleborns, you're going to look
similar. There's pure bloods, and then there's pure bloods.
And then there's the rich ones versus the Weasleys.
Yes.
And there were hints in the books, like the Salem Witches Institute, I think it's called, which would have a history that's 400 years old.
Mm.
So it would be easy for them to have their equivalent of an Ivy League.
Well, the same Witches Institute is actually interesting because there's two schools of thought on that. Where's my wizard's hat? Put on a real wizard's hat.
That's
a different kind of podcast.
I know. But where's my yellow and black scarf?
Yes.
Wellington and Hufflepuff, they both wear the same scarf, so that's really useful.
You're a Hufflepuff?
Yes.
I am.
I'm a Slytherin.
I was a Slytherin.
Anyway,
for a long time.
Anyway, because
I was Slytherin for a long time.
Where's my nerditry? The Salem Witches Institute. There's, you know, the people who think, who look at it and go, yes, that's an all-girls school in Salem. And then there's the people who say, no, it's more like the Women's Institutes of England. And
I'm not familiar.
Yes, it's women's groups that
or
get together.
Or perhaps for an American. Something like the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I can go.
Yeah, and because again, she's writing from an English perspective, so maybe that was more of an influence than something like that. So, because there were a bunch of old women holding up a flag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a school group.
Mm-hmm. What I immediately thought of was those organizations you find in America celebrating, for instance, there are organizations where it's just the descendants of people who are involved in particular things. So this would be the descendants of the survivors of...
Salem,
yeah, okay.
But then again, the whole burning of witches in the magical world, they had the spells that would prevent it.
Yeah.
Basically, it produced a mild tickling effect, and there was this one chick...
I remember that.
...who really loved that feeling that
Let herself get burned many times.
So, of course... the deaths in Salem were more the crushings and the hangings.
The crushings, hangings, yeah.
Drown. You know, more weight. Things like that. That would be the continental burnings type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be interesting to see how that is, and I'm going to just stop being about the Harry Potter nerding now.
No, that's fascinating. Yeah, I didn't even know. When is that movie supposed to be coming out?
I have no idea. I just know that it's been announced.
It's been announced, okay.
And Tumblr has picked, like, 10 white guys that they want to be. The same 10. Guess who's on it?
The only one that I've seen so far is the awesome black guy from Misfits, and I really want him to play him.
Oh.
No.
Because I think he'd be really good. I haven't seen any of the white guys.
Huh.
That's really interesting.
Because there were some big articles about it, and they actually took the graphic from Tumblr.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Because you know how Tumblr likes his white British guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Good God. They're like cats on the rest of the internet. I'm looking forward to, I just finished reading Catching Fire, so I thought, like, I'll watch the movie, although I haven't gotten around to reading Mockingjay, and I've been told by some people just... You may not want even to bother because it's disappointing.
I find the pacing is awkward.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
In my opinion, it is,
actually.
People say that the issue is that there's too much focus on emotional stuff and on the PTSD, which I like to actually see represented. I think the reason it comes across a little awkwardly is because the pacing is really slow on the points that have the PTSD and the emotional trauma, and the pacing is really quick around the action scenes, and it just feels a little unbalanced.
It does, and the action scenes, it's... If you try to list the events that happen in Mockingjay, it's like, this happens, and then it's a while, and then that happens, and then there's the big finale, but then there's like a big, like...
It's structure and pacing, and it's all really awkward, I think.
Catching Fire is... in terms of action and just everything heightened, it is amazing, and the escalation and all of the oh my god moments.
Yeah.
And I'm so looking forward to seeing those on film.
Oh yeah. I almost feel like the last book was pressured and a little bit crushed by the popularity of the first two books.
And the shipping.
How are they gonna turn that into two films?
I don't know.
Well, I really hope that they manage to focus a lot on the action.
Yes.
Because in film, all the introspection is not going to come across.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the problems I had with Mockingjay is it was really limited by that first person. Because it was like, boom, revolution. And she can only see this one tiny thing. And she's...
So hopefully they'll be able to show the revolution from all perspectives. Introducing other characters and their struggles would be really interesting as well.
I could play into it, and they also could do a bit of a Hobbit, you know, in terms of adding things and fix up the ending and give us a bit more of a steady decline and a steady...
The ending was very abrupt, in my opinion. Not to spoil Angela or...
No,
it's fine.
It was a really odd ending. Mm. It had what you thought would be the ending, and then it had a bit of kind of, now we're going to set about doing things, and then it just ended. But there are a lot of interesting questions that you could answer in a movie adaptation of a book that weren't answered in the book.
Yes.
So, and those are, again, me just loving the meta of, but what happens? What is in this society?
Also, you don't get that thing where you're like, wait, what? Go back 2 pages. Which was a problem I had.
Yeah, that which was is funny problem. Because I thought that the first person present tense worked so well in the original Hunger Games.
When it was focus,
it worked.
But when it became revolution,
you needed more than one person.
Yeah. Because otherwise, a lot of it was just... oh, Katniss, this happened.
Yeah.
While you were doing this. Or while you were asleep.
Well, the film adaptations have, from the get-go, set it up to be more than just her perspective. So
exactly.
They are going to have that opportunity, that's which is something you could do with Mockingjay. You could show a lot more of the characters' perspectives.
I think they'll have to, otherwise there's going to be that exciting attack thing where they're all underground and... Well, you're going to have a lot of scenes of you sitting around underground for a while.
We'll
and that's,
actually,
that's not fun.
We'll actually get to see what's happening. Which was...
Seeing the revolution would be great.
That would be good.
Because,
nice.
I mean, we saw glimpses of what was happening in a couple of other districts.
Yes.
They could go into that more.
Yeah.
Like, way more.
Way more. And also, there's these other subplots that are going around, but because of that limited first-person perspective...
Actually, yeah, that's a point. And you could have a lot of really fun parallels. I'm trying to say this without spoilers, but there are similar things happening to characters that are around Katniss, and then similar things to that are happening to characters that are in the capital. Oh, God. Spoilers.
Okay.
Damn it.
It's okay. All right. I'll read it in a bit.
But yeah, it's you could have some really interesting parallels to highlight the problematic nature of the power struggle that takes place during the revolution.
Okay, yes, that sounds exciting. Totally. I think we're coming to a close. So we've covered it's been a bit. Good start though, good inaugural podcast. Next podcast will be about a month from now. We figure we'll do this
just before Nano.
Just for Nano. So that one will be all about, hey, it's Nano next month. Who's excited? Who's going, oh God, kill me?
Who's actually ready? Who's actually going to write for Nano before?
Who actually plans ahead? I barely did.
I will be this month because it's been so long.
I have started a different story again.
Jack, yeah, sorry.
My most successful Nano novel was one where I had the idea more than a year ago and been thinking about it fairly steadily since then. Not so much a perfect rigid plan, but just having all the material on hand so that when I reach that point I could write about it.
I like to have a plan and then completely disregard it.
Hey, at least you have a plan to disregard. Because it means you've thought about stuff, not right, I'm going to plot out a war on the day one of Nano. Because I'm one of those people who's like, oh, I need to go research. And then, like, 3 hours later, I have no writing, but I know exactly how long it takes to fly from X to Y and how many stops you have and what's the nearest airport that I have to go to and how long does it take to drive from there. This is what I have just done in the past 2 days. Answer, 35 and then a 2.5 hour drive at the end.
I just bought a new computer, at least in part. So that I would have enough RAM to finish the incredibly detailed 3D model of a castle that I'm building for Dandy.
Yeah. Awesome.
That is exciting.
That's awesome.
And at some point, we're going to actually write.
At some point, we write. That's what Nano is for.
That's like our writing group motto. Sometimes we write.
Other time, we just chat tons about, all these random things.
I mean, sometimes we read bad erotica out loud in cafes.
Yes, we do that. Sometimes we get told to be quiet.
Sometimes we read incredibly violent stuff out in cafes.
Yeah.
Because I don't write erotica.
Yes.
No, I was reading it, remember? I wasn't writing it.
I know, but...
Writing.
But I don't read out
sex,
out either.
Sex, violence...
Because when we did the...
Naughtiest.
Read out the bit of your Nano. I'm like, well, the only bit I have is this bit where a character's throat gets ripped out and his spine broken. And
woo!
This is our protagonist. She gets better.
She got better.
It's just, she can't talk right now.
And
because there's no throat.
And since we got, and since we are, situated here in the middle of Middle Earth, Wellington, we are at, like, ground zero of the next installment of The Hobbit...
Yes.
Saga, which I'm semi kind of looking forward to, but I do kind of agree with people. I was like, seriously, these are three movies from one book.
Yeah.
As when I totally understand, like, the previous movies being, it seems like it's reversed. The previous movies were like they were narrowing down just to get them to fit into three huge movies.
Yeah.
Whereas here, there's three movies coming out from one book that actually is the only Tolkien book I've ever read all the way through, because I love the guy, he's great world building, but for God's sake,
He writes stories for his world, not great worlds for his stories.
He would have been a great GM. He would have been a great... I'd have loved to... It would have been like the...
But how railroaded would you have been?
Probably a lot.
No, you need to explore this bit so I can show you all this.
Yeah.
An interesting
GM, I guess, would have been a thing.
You're going to skip the mines of Moria?
What?
No.
Yes. No, you have to carry Tom Bombadil with you for a while. No, can we kill him? No. My husband especially hates Tom Bombadil. I think I have a theory that it's like, I think, I also know another English major who hates Tom Bombadil. I think maybe this is a, I don't know what it is, it's a prejudice among certain people. Yeah. He's an interesting character. Some people have pointed out that he's really badass because he actually was like kind of, didn't he pick up the ring? Mm. I was like, and then just gave it back.
There is a horrifying theory around Tom Bombadil that highlights a lot of important details that seem really innocuous, and it's kind of, there's a theory on the internet and it's horrifying, and I like to believe it because it's fun. And also the horrifying thing that Gandalf like goes and sees him before he leaves Middle-earth. Because the whole time Tom Bombadil's like, no one will challenge me because he's really powerful in his own land, and he's kind of the last mainstay of power beyond Sauron. That's kind of scary.
That's pretty scary. Wow. Scary, scary.
Yeah, even the elves are leaving and Tom Bombadil's like, no, I'm not leaving. I'm fine here. No one comes in here because I'm that goddamn scary.
Wow.
Samuel L. Jackson.
He seems so cheerful.
I love him so much.
He's just cheerful. I haven't read the book since I was about 11, so I didn't like him then, but I was 11, so...
Yeah. I think I skipped
He's a dick.
But yeah, I think The Hobbit films being so long is an example of what would have happened if Peter Jackson had had the sort of approval he has from everyone now...
Yes.
When he started doing Lord of the Rings. Yeah. He would have expanded them a lot more if he had had permission from the studios and from everyone else to do
if
so.
People had had that faith in him.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't particularly like it being so long because it just felt like the action sequences were never ending.
You know, Well, The Hobbit is driven just by action, then action, then action, then action. But, I would actually have just put it in two films. I think three is pushing it.
Yeah.
Because... The second one is called The Desolation of Smaug, and then that's it, right? And then there's the Battle of Five Armies. Yeah. That is all that happens.
Mm. That's gonna be the whole film.
They're raiding the other sources, aren't they?
They're not really making shit up. I thought they were allowed, because that's what Woody was saying. Another member of our group was saying that they were raiding, like these that Chris Tolkien had given the okay to use more.
Just
It's based on it, but it's hugely Peter Jackson's adaptation.
There's
of
more than you think between the killing of Smaug and the Battle of the Five Armies.
There's more.
There's
a whole lot of politics between
There is the politics between the like the villages and what happens and what's the place called? I can't remember the town.
Lake Town?
Yeah, Lake Town. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I couldn't recall.
Lake Town.
What else am I supposed to say? There's politics around that, and then Bilbo gets knocked out, and the Battle of Five Armies happen, and I really hope that will happen, because that would be hilarious if you had a movie called The Hobbit that doesn't have The Hobbit in it.
It's a bit like, wait, didn't that...
Just randomly panning.
Were we just talking about
lying on the ground
Revolution while the protagonist is asleep?
Yeah, that seems to be more common than you
people
think. Because...
While you're out.
Yeah, while you're in the bathroom. You know, there probably is someone in these revolutions who's, like, in the bathroom when so-and-so gets assassinated. You know, like, okay, it's this point in the movie where I can go to the loo.
Yes.
And that turn, you come back and you're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Answer, everything.
Everything, yes. I've heard there was an app or a website actually called, like, gopee.com where you could actually find it. Someone actually decided to, like, watch some films and be all, like, okay.
You can step out here.
They just hang around eating tacos. I don't know. I actually can't think of a single movie where that happens. That just came out of my head. Anyway, all right, we can wrap. This was our first inaugural podcast. Yay. Okay.
So yes, we're very sorry.
We're very sorry.
We apologize.
We apologize for ourselves. We apologize many times over at the cafe where we loudly discuss bad erotica and violence.
And just other things, just loudly.
Occasionally I knock over chairs and pretend they're dead bodies.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's very charming.
I'm glad I don't witness those ones.
It's so charming.
Sorry for all the Harry Potter.
No, that's a feature, not a bug.
Guys, never apologize.
Never apologize. This is
especially not for Harry Potter.
Entirely, yeah. No. Never.
Because seriously, if you had let me go, I would have.
We can make that an extra cast when what's the movie called that's based on Fantastic Beasts?
They haven't put out a title, have they?
It's just Newt Scamander's Adventures.
Newt Scamander
in Jazz
stuff,
Age.
Jazz Age in New York. But I know he's like. No, I will.
Yeah, we should probably
save it for next time.
J.K. Rowling loves him. That's what I was going to say.
Next is a book. So, yeah, so next time then, October, we'll be discussing more upcoming Nano, anything else. We'll probably have a different cast because there's at least a dozen of us who are interested in being involved in this. So, and we all have something.
People have lives.
We've got lives. We've got different schedules.
Well, some of us do.
Different things to offer. Some of us could sit around and talk about murder all day, Sarah.
You're a murderologist.
Yep. So that's all for us now, and thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Wellington Inkslingers. Our theme music is Metricity by Declan Doherty Ramsey. You can find us on Twitter at inkslingerswgtn and on Tumblr at Wellington Writers. Thanks for listening.